What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, I'm Sarah. When planning our home birth, my husband Matthew and I were really frustrated by the lack of empowering and honest home birth resources. So we created this podcast to start a new conversation for moms and families like us. This is Doing It at Home.
Hey guys, welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast. Today is a really well-timed episode, and it just sort of happened that way. We didn't really plan it intentionally. So if you listened to our last episode, number 82, we spoke with Jessica Moore, the creator of the documentary Why Not Home, which explores why medical professionals who provide hospital birth care are choosing to birth outside of the hospital and have home births. Well, enter Alyssa, whose story we have today. Alyssa is not associated with the film Why Not Home at all, but she's an example of exactly who is featured and talked about in Why Not Home. And it pairs really nicely, especially if you listened to the last episode. So anyway, Alyssa is a registered nurse, and most of her experience is in the postpartum and nursery units. So she knows what it's like to work in a hospital and be around birth. And yet she herself chose to have a home birth, which is really cool. And she chose in the third trimester. So it's just an example of how it's never too late to choose the birth plan that works best for you and to choose the model of care that you really want. And Alyssa is one of our hashtag birth junkies out there who's just really passionate about birth, and she knows a lot about it too. So she has a ton of resources that she drops throughout our conversation, and we have plenty of links to that on the website for you at diahpodcast.com. Anyway, I'm going to shut up and just jump right into this episode because it's so cool. Thank you, Alyssa, and enjoy.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, Alyssa. Welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast. We are so grateful for you hanging out with us today. How the heck are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So are we. We are very excited. We really appreciated your email and the message you sent and just kind of sharing a little bit about yourself. And ever since we read that, we've just been very pumped to jump into this conversation with you. So like Sarah said, thank you again.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you. I'm pumped. I'm as equally pumped.
Yes. Nice. All right. Well, kick it off with just telling us a little bit about yourself and where you live and your family.
Awesome. Well, my name's Alyssa. My husband's name is Chris. And I have a daughter who's going to be 2 in August named Zoe. We live in San Antonio, Texas, so kind of central Texas. And the reason I kind of emailed you is I'm very passionate about birth. I'm a registered nurse here locally. And I've been a nurse for a little under 4 years, and I've kind of had a smattering of different experiences, but the majority of it was spent as a postpartum nurse at a local hospital. So that definitely colored and informed my birth choices.
I can imagine.
And maybe a little birth fears. And that's kind of what brought me, well, I was passionate about birth before, hence why I became a postpartum nurse, but that's kind of how that all really culminated.
Wow. So I'm sure that comes with a mixed bag of things. Like you said, you know, your passion and your interest, but also some fears in there. Like it just all gets mixed up.
Yes, that's so true. You see so many amazing, beautiful, lovely experiences in the hospital, regardless of whatever that entails for each mom. And then some really scary, sometimes not so great outcomes, not just necessarily sometimes perceived and actual outcomes, because you do get moms who come in and maybe had one expectation. And then, as we all know in birth, that sometimes things don't always go according to plan. And I think that wasn't that on your last podcast, that was, or one of the recent podcasts, was sometimes curveballs come and you just have to cope with them. And it's a bit of a roller coaster.
Exactly. Yeah. So then, given your environment and where you were at and being passionate about birth beforehand, what were some ideas or visions that you had for yourself eventually when you had children?
Well, funny enough, I actually, like, I thought prior to becoming pregnant and having to make the decisions for my own birth, I actually, like, thought, this is just so funny, I thought that home birth was, like, only something you could do in, like, L.A. and New York City. Like, they didn't have that available, like, in Texas, which is not really known for being on the, like, cutting medical edge. And I have friends who have had home births. And I didn't know it. It was not something I knew about till I was looking at my own options. I actually started with an obstetrician and did the traditional route of, you know, early sonogram and, you know, 5-minute doctor visits with 2-hour waits, you know, that whole spiel that everybody talks about, I feel like, when they have an obstetrician. And it just didn't, like, feel right. And that's actually when I started, like, researching and asking friends, you know, about their different stories and realizing that there's actually a huge, and I feel like that probably with a lot of places in the United States and beyond, that there's actually like a huge home birth / birth center community, you know, community out there that I just didn't even know about. Mm-hmm. And I was so thankful that I was able to kind of dive into that because it really opened my mind. Being in the medical field, a lot of those people think that's the only way. And I certainly think it's an important way. And I'm so grateful that we have
absolutely
modern medicine. Yes. But but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the only way, I guess I should say.
So what was your reaction when you were asking your friends and you heard from that first friend of yours that said, actually, I had a home birth? What was your reaction to that?
Oh, I was thrilled and intrigued, which I think is probably, like, based on their reaction to my reaction, is unusual. And that I, you know, I would say in my experience, I feel like it's usually like, what? You did what? Are you crazy?
Yeah.
But I was like, oh my gosh, tell me everything. Start from conception.
Yes. And go. You know what
I mean? I want to know everything. But I loved hearing their stories, and each one is so different, whether they be, like, actually, I randomly, and I've even met people who have the same midwife that I delivered with that I didn't know, you know, we just met randomly.
That's cool.
And even with the same midwife, the experiences are so beautiful and unique and different. And so I was just enthralled. I was like, I need to know everything. I want to know every single detail.
That we get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why, like, this podcast so appeals to me, because I feel like I get to, like, sit down with my coffee, like, when I listen to it, and okay, it's like I'm sitting down with a friend and I want to hear all about the birth or their story or whatever story it is that day.
Right, right. You just settle in, big eyes, open ears, and like, let's do this.
Exactly. Yes, it's my dream. If I could just find a job instead of being a nurse, maybe I could just like talk, like listen to people's stories. That would be delightful. I need to find that niche.
Yeah, that sounds pretty nice. I like that too.
Right? I guess you kind of get that a little bit, but then you have that interviewing aspect. So you kind of get both ends.
Yeah, we do. And I'm remembering now, like, early on when, Sarah, when you presented the home birth kind of idea, and hearing those early accounts from people, and just being, like you said, Alyssa, just a mix of just intrigue and excitement and a little like,
yeah.
What? Okay, hold on. Tell me more. I gotta learn more about this.
Yes. Oh, 100%. It's just each story. There's just so much beauty and just such a beautiful story in each moment and each story. It's just, I'm enthralled, really.
And then you made the shift on your own home birth journey a little, I guess we could say later in the game than most. I mean, we made the switch almost halfway through, but you were in your third trimester, right?
I think I was just in the third trimester. I was like 31, 32 weeks. And I think that's, I forget the numbers of where the trimesters cut in, but it was like right at the beginning. Or no, is 28 weeks the third trimester? Oh goodness. I can't do math.
We are not the people to No.
Well, I think 13-ish, 14-ish is like the first. So then like 20. Yeah. So I guess that would make sense. So at any rate, I guess I was well into my third trimester. It doesn't feel like it because I didn't deliver till 42 weeks. So the third trimester lasted forever.
Yes.
But,
gotcha.
But yes, it was a bit later. It was because, so I actually went from, I went from an OB and then I went to a midwife group that delivered at the hospital, because again, my mindset, which I feel like is kind of common, was, oh, the hospital is the only way. That was still at that point where I hadn't really found out about the community yet. And so I was like, well, what's a way I can still be within those parameters that society kind of dictates, but get a little more power, a little bit more personal touch, I guess, sure, in my care? And what really drives me, I want to really say, is evidence-based practice. A lot of people go to home birth because it's a more natural route, which I 1,000% agree with. But actually, there's a lot of aspects about home birth that is about evidence-based care. And if people don't know what that is, evidence-based care is just, what's the best practice? What do the statistics and the outcomes tell us? And in the United States, really, as a whole, our outcomes are really low on the kind of ratings for first world countries. We are like at the bottom of the list. I don't actually remember exactly what number, but that's a lot of countries. Like I think some 40 some odd countries are ahead of us as far as statistics goes. And in a country where we consider ourselves to be kind of, what's the word, where you're kind of on top and we like to be on the cutting edge. So anyways, I went with the midwife group that only delivered at a hospital, and that was much better care, but it still was a bit more kind of similar to the OB route as far as there's these five or six midwives, and whoever's on call basically at this specific hospital will be where you know, who you deliver with. And each time you go to your appointment, it's whichever midwife is on. And they were all super lovely and just I can't sing their praises enough. It's just, it wasn't quite enough for me. I actually found I need to get a little crunchier. It's not quite enough. They, like, for example, the real crux actually, of why I probably would have stuck with them had this one little teeny tiny thing been different, is that they actually didn't allow you, because of hospital policy, not necessarily their own midwife practice, but didn't allow you to deliver in the tub. You could labor, but not deliver. And I guess that's actually becoming common. I've heard that happening, even though there's actually not been any kind of real hard research that shows that that's actually bad. So I don't really know what that is about. But at any rate, and I thought, well, I really like baths when I don't feel good. Like if I just have like a cold and your body aches, a bath is kind of my default. So I'm
the same.
Right. It's just so soothing and I don't know, just helps you deal. And so I thought, oh, I'll definitely want a water birth. And I made my husband even watch The Business of Being Born. I'd watched it way before I got pregnant because I just, again, all things birth I want to hear about. But he was actually the one that was the, like, that crux moment of, I was like, watch this. This is what I want, but we can't do it because we're in Texas. And he's like, Alyssa, like, we know people who've had home births. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? I was trying to show him this video to help me get that at the hospital. And he's kind of like, why are you jumping through all these hoops? And they don't even do what you want as far as the water birth. And we can just do what our other friends have done before with another midwife. It blew my mind. I had like That's this cool. mind shift for a while. And that was at like 30 weeks. And then at 31 or 32 is when we moved, if I'm not mistaken, when we actually went and looked for a midwife and found ours. Nice. Long story short.
Well, so it sounds like Chris was just totally on board and he was supportive in creating the experience that you really wanted.
Yes. He's so amazing. He's awesome. Kind of very calm. I'm a bit more of a type A planner, which I think is somewhat common as far as the stereotypes go, but he definitely is like the calm, steady presence who's like, what, like, why are you making this harder, Alyssa? Why? Let's just go do the home birth and get what you want.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Like, why do you want the struggle route? Why do you want the path of more resistance?
I ask myself. And then myself you're like, I don't sometimes. Know.
Yeah.
Yes.
For fun. I love a lot of the stuff that you just mentioned, and just take like one step back, your perspective and your sharing on the evidence-based practice is awesome. That's actually not something we talk about a whole lot on the show. You know, we kind of dive into the more experiential and the, you know, just the story piece around these home births. But to really look at the statistics and what is the data telling us? And yeah, it's a shake your head type of moment when you just look at how far behind we are in birth comparatively speaking. And it's frustrating. So there's that piece. And then also what you mentioned about the shift and the, you know, laboring in water but not birthing in water. I've heard of that changing as well in hospitals here in Atlanta and the surrounding Atlanta region. Hospitals that were, you know, very friendly to more natural and family-centered births are kind of making a shift away from that recently. And I don't know if it's a, like, cover their butts type of deal or, you know, there was one scenario that they want to make an example out of. Like, I don't know, but that it is kind of happening. So it's interesting, you know, that's going on over there too.
That is a strange. I have heard, this is not me like giving you exact facts, by the way, so take this with a grain of salt. But I, from my understanding, as of like a year or two ago, it was because there was a not so good outcome with a baby in a water birth. But from the research that I did at the time, if again, this was like a year or two ago, so the facts are a little fuzzier now. But I believe the baby did pass away, but which is very sad. And of course, I mean, we should be researching and doing the due diligence on that situation. But from what the outcome seemed to have been, it didn't, from the research that was done within that, you know, that team, they didn't find it was correlated with the water birth.
Right.
But like you said, they've got to cover their butts, which is kind of, get on a half my soapbox, is that I feel like so much of medicine is liability based and right. not based on patients or mothers or whatever the yes. area is. And I think that's honestly, I think I, again, fuzzier on the facts because it's been a couple years, but I think that's why that started. And it's just such a shame to go actually against what's better for parents, for babies, because of liability. That's just heartbreaking to me as a nurse. It's just like, this is not what we do. This is not the point of what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, one of the big takeaways from just listening in on the conversation you both were having was about the importance of educating yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's something that we hear again and again from moms and families on this podcast, is how much self-education they did, you know, looking up articles, reading different books, reaching out to different people, talking with experts. You know, it that to me is incredibly important in just being informed. But then also, I believe it allows the mom and the families to just be a little bit more at ease with
mm-hmm,
their decision.
So
you know, be able to find that peace, that calm, that confidence in what they're choosing. And so that's, you know, that's something that I want to put out to all listeners. You know, if you're planning your birth right now, just be the most educated that you can.
So true. So true. And that's what, when you have a doctor, let's take it away from home birth. Like if you're going to have a cardiac procedure, let's just do that. Your doctor is supposed to be the one that says, here's the benefits, here's the risks. Let's weigh these two things and come up with our result, whether that be a surgery or whatever. But I feel like in birth, like you said, moms have to do all that research for yourself, because you can't necessarily count on a physician to give you the equal risk benefit. Physicians are brilliant, and I don't mean to discredit the medical field, because they're just wonderful. But unfortunately, in their schooling nowadays, they aren't given as much of a broad schooling in education. That's the better word, in like breech births and like, you know, all the things that don't necessarily go according to plan. And so, unfortunately, I think it seems that they're not always really well versed on giving the risk benefit ratio, which is kind of supposed to be the hallmark of a physician. Informed consent, like when you go to a hospital and consent for an epidural or whatever procedure, whether it be birth or not, informed consent is supposed to be, here's the risks, here's the benefits, let's make our decision. Whereas right now it's almost, just in my experience, I'm sure there are amazing hospitals, and there really are, I've worked with amazing nurses and physicians, but some of them, it's just, here's what you need to do, and I'm going to feed you some fear tactics to not do anything else, which right. I don't particularly agree with.
Right. Something like, if this doesn't happen in the next hour, I'm leaving, so we're going to give you this and cut you open. Otherwise, you know, you're SOL.
Do you want your baby to die? Like that, people say that, I'm just like, are you kidding me? There's just not a better way. I mean, and we're not talking like an emergency cesarean where it's like, this baby needs to be out in 7 minutes. Like, that's not the situation I'm talking about. I'm talking about like an episiotomy or something that could maybe wait, or, you know, I don't know, things like that where it's just like, maybe we could use different verbiage on this situation, shall we? Maybe? It's a bit of a heated moment. Let's not like, and then this mom, instead of being informed consent and risk benefit ratio, instead it's, am I killing my baby if I don't do this? Which is not informed consent. That's not at all, in my opinion.
Right. And then you have women on the other end of their birth experiences feeling mistreated or wronged, or like they've missed out on something, lost, guilty, shame, like, oh gosh, the list goes on and on.
Yes. Oh, you're so right. And that's where postpartum nursing is so different, I think, from labor and delivery nursing. Labor and delivery nursing, they're kind of dealing with the medical aspect. Postpartum, of course, is medical, and we're managing, you know, making sure you're not hemorrhaging or something like that. But a lot of it actually is education and just support. I feel like it's a little bit more doula-y. I mean, it's still medical, but, you know, there is a lot of like talking with moms and, you know, especially like right after, where they're kind of almost like glassy-eyed, like, I don't even know what just happened. Everything went so quick and it was so different. And there's kind of helping moms get local resources even, because it does seem that people who had not even unexpected outcomes, because you can have unexpected outcomes and still roll with the punches, like kind of like the NICU nurse that y'all interviewed previously. She was still able to, like you said, have this beautiful, like she felt she had a beautiful experience, even though things didn't go according to plan. I think it's about the power and the, like you kind of talked about, that knowledge. She had a lot of it. So she was able to kind of know what do forceps really mean? Whereas maybe your average mom may not. And I think that feeling like that power has been taken is where the emotions can sometimes change your perspective, in my opinion, just my experiential opinion.
Very well said, in your experiential opinion, which is appreciated. Appreciated.
There's not necessarily stats to back me up on that. It's just what I found. And so that's the beautiful thing about postpartum nursing, is beautiful and hard, because sometimes it is hard, and they're only, you know, a mom's only there for a couple of days, and so there's kind of a limit on how much you can help necessarily. So a lot of it's, here are some resources for when you leave, because you may deal with postpartum depression or baby blues a little bit harder than someone who maybe had a great experience. Though that doesn't necessarily mean anything, not necessarily, but it can.
Right. Ooh, that's a lot. I think I'm going to need a second to process that. So we're going to take a real quick break and then we'll come back. Hey, Doing It at Home mamas, Sarah here. And I need to take a second to tell you about something that I made for you. Yes, you, moms just like us, who are clear that we need to take care of ourselves in this game of motherhood. We need to experience balance, but sometimes we're not really quite sure how to do it, or we feel like we don't have the time. I get it. So I created the Balanced Mama Moment audio series, a 20-part audio experience that dives into what it means to make a balanced mama moment for yourself and how you can apply that to all areas of your life to help you in this crazy journey of motherhood. So go to sarahbivens.com and click on Balanced Mama to learn more. Again, that's sarahbivens.com and click Balanced Mama. Okay, so in making your decision to go home birth, how was the process of sharing that with friends, family, coworkers, or did you, or what did that look like?
Yes, with my family, with the immediate family, I was very open. Most of them kind of trust. They know that I'm really passionate about evidence-based things in all aspects of my nursing career. Such for now, I don't just do postpartum. Now I've expanded my practice where I fill into all kinds of different places. But so they really trusted that I'd done my research. Most of them. There were a couple people who were like, you know, the traditional, like, are you sure? Did you know that that's less safe? And I'm like, actually, and then I go on my tangent of, let me tell you more information than you really wanted to know.
Right. You don't know what you just signed up for.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh, you know, their eyes are big and they're kind of just like, wow, okay. And then that didn't happen anymore. But I didn't attack them. It's just like, I don't think you really understand what you are talking about. So other than one or two people, my family, the immediate family was really, really open and receptive. And in fact, my side of the family is actually not very, they don't, really agree with a lot of modern medicine, which actually, usually I'm the one that's like, no, you need to go to the doctor for this, like this thing unrelated to birth. And they're the ones that are like, no, no, I'll just take some vitamins. So it's kind of funny how it was like this opposite, you know, where I'm like, no, no, you don't actually need to, I don't have to go to the doctor to have a baby. It was kind of a funny little opposite there.
That is cool. Like some role reversal.
Yeah, exactly. And they were all super on board with that. And then I didn't actually tell many friends or coworkers because a lot of them are in the nursing field just because that's where I'm at. You kind of bloom where you're planted, you know. So a lot of my friends are RNs and are in the birth area of registered nursing. And I didn't tell them. I just, because it was so late in the game that I actually had moved, I just didn't tell them that last move to a home birth midwife. Yeah. I just was like, oh yeah, I'm going to just still deliver at this one hospital. And like I was afraid if I went into labor, I was so afraid to go into labor at work. Maybe that's why I went up to 42 weeks. Cause I was afraid they like weren't going to let me leave. Not like trap me, but just like, oh, you're in labor. Come, we'll like have a baby right here. It'll be great.
I can imagine.
And, like, no. And this is a wonderful hospital. I do not mean to denounce this hospital. It's just, I wanted a home birth, you know? And so it was like, Don't go into labor. And it didn't happen. Which by 41 weeks, you're like, Jesus, when am I going to go into labor? But at any rate, so then they didn't find out till after. And there was definitely some backlash as far as, you know, and it was all very indirect. No one would tell me directly, which actually frustrates me because at least if someone would talk to me directly, I could very clearly like explain what the decision process was like. And that maybe some of their preconceived notions being in the field, maybe they are preconceived. It's not just facts, you know, that they think are infallible. And so there was more indirect comments kind of basically insinuating that anyone who has a home birth, like wants their baby to die, like that's literally what people indirectly said, not about me, but about like posting articles on Facebook, like right after my birth. And you're like, where I kind of came out of the closet and was like, we had her at home. Here's some pictures. And that's why my furniture is in the background, like that kind of thing. Yeah. And you're just like, that's just really not a dialogue where one wants to hear any kind of facts or information. That's yes, just kind of absolutely narrow-minded, like not receptive. Yeah. But my whole thing that I kind of talk to people who are in that medical field is that kind of the medical like method of care, kind of the name of the game is triage. That's so when you go to the hospital, you generally start in the ER and there's a triage nurse and she says, how high acuity you are. And acuity just means like severity of your illness. Like heart attack, you're going straight to the back and they're going to work on you immediately. You have a cold, you're going to wait a little while because, you know, that heart attack needs to be taken care of first, just for example. So I don't understand why birth, which is not a pathological process in and of itself, it's not, there's nothing necessarily wrong. Pathology can come into it, such as infection, hemorrhage, et cetera, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to happen. So why is it that when you're talking about birth, you have to immediately go to the like heart attack acuity? It, you know, why not go to the, you know, or like even before an ER, you can go to like a little med clinic, you know, for like a little cold or whatever. Why not have a low risk mom have, you know, do the majority of the laboring at home and then go to a birth center or have her have the baby at home or, you know, whatever kind of tier that you choose. I kind of asked them why it can be in medicine one way is, oh, triage is okay, but no, not for birth. Triage isn't okay. That doesn't actually make sense in medicine. The scientific method's actually supposed to make sense. You're supposed to be able to kind of do A and have B result. Yeah, and so it kind of gets to me when people kind of allow that hypocrisy and don't really value that, like, there should be a little consistency, in my opinion, in medicine.
Yeah. But, you know. Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts.
I'm sure.
I'm going a little bit down the tube of like raging feminist rant, but I'm calming it because all I'm thinking in my head is like patriarchal society.
Yes.
Like just dictating how we move, do whatever with our bodies. Yes. But like, yes. I'm a chill. I'm a chill on that.
We'll start another podcast for that.
Yes. Well, and then also, I mean, kind of related to that, it's just when you're talking about the acuity difference in a hospital, like in a home birth or a birth center, you have one to two or three, I mean, depending on the situation, like maybe if you have twins or whatever, midwives that are there for you and you only. Like, for example, in my particular case, one midwife was also a NICU nurse, and she was there the whole time with my kind of quote unquote, my midwife that took care of me. She was the one that actually like delivered my daughter. And then the other midwife was there to provide, of course, she's a midwife, so she can help me as well. But I hadn't seen her the whole pregnancy, you know, throughout the whole pregnancy. And so that kind of quote unquote, as we call it, acuity level is a really good acuity level for compared to the hospital. So people say, oh, the hospital's safer. But what does that really mean? What is really the difference? The difference is you have usually one RN to two, anywhere from one to four patients in this particular setting, depending on the day. If they're short-staffed, that can be worse, depending on what nurse you get. And I love nurses. This is not like a stab at nurses. They are amazing and they make the health system run. But they're everybody has about 2 to 4 years of nursing experience when you're talking about an associate or a bachelor nurse, less if you're talking LVNs, but they don't usually work L&D usually. So, and when you become a labor and delivery nurse, the difference in training is usually like 6 months of training, whereas a midwife, I mean, that's years of training. And even the best L&D nurse, which there are amazing ones. I don't mean to say that there aren't, they're truly my hat's off to them. I could not do what they do every day. But there is no humanly possible way that one L&D nurse can be with 1 to 4, or, you know, 2 to 4 patients at the same time. Also, when you're talking physicians, oftentimes, especially at night, there's like one physician for the entire floor. That's an obstetrician. And then like maybe one anesthesiologist, though sometimes they have to call them in depending on the hospital size. Like, is that really safer? I mean, there are RNs who have to deliver babies because the doctors can't make it in time. And again, they're amazing. But like the real difference when you really get down to brass tacks is an OR. That's the difference. And I bet you a lot of the labor and delivery nurses, their big thing that they always tell me, which I totally hear them. I hear them loud and clear. They say sometimes you never know what's going to come through that door and you never know what's going to happen next. Things can just change on a dime. Which is true, but if that L&D nurse, that experienced, amazing L&D nurse could have been with that one patient and had been schooled for, you know, 2 to 4 years and had you know, my midwife had like 30 years experience. Do they really mean to tell me that there'd be tons and tons of surprises if they could be in that room that entire time and watch that mother? Mm. Probably not. There'd probably be a lot of opportunities to intervene prophylactically or to know, oh, there's something brewing. We need to escalate care to a hospital. Or, you know, obviously you're at the hospital, so an obstetrician. But right. So when people just say, you know, oh, the hospital's safer, bar none, that's it. There's a little bit more to it. You're kind of at the mercy of who's there and what time and what hospital, et cetera. So that really ticks me off when you compare two or more incredibly trained midwives who have the luxury of just having that one patient at hand to a nurse who has to somehow, I don't know how they do it, somehow run between multiple rooms. Sometimes they're pushing and laboring at the same time. I mean, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
It's incomparable. It's incomparable.
What you just described with that, you know, that scenario where the person who's there for the entire process can then detect something, can notice, hey, this is happening, so why don't we go ahead and escalate this? That mm-hmm. was almost verbatim the conversation that we had with our midwife and her team. It was, you know, she's going to be with us throughout, you know, the earliest parts of labor, and she will be able to spot things, you know, like you said, decades of experience. And that to me was insanely comforting.
So you know, true.
Because I was somebody who was not down with the home birth when we first started talking about it because of all my fears, because of all of the, you know, well, the hospital's absolutely safer. Are you kidding me? And there's doctors, and if this goes wrong and if that goes wrong. But the scenario you just painted is the scenario that I really thought about when, you know, speaking with our midwife, Debbie, and you know, and was like, wow, that's very true. And it just allowed me to you know, really trust in their expertise. And so anyway, I'm rambling, but I wanted to say—
No, you're 100% on the money.
Yes. Yeah. So thank you for describing that, because when you did, I was like, wow, that's exactly what we experienced.
Because they are experts. I mean, that I think oftentimes people kind of denounce their expertise. No, they are experts. And it's kind of a disservice to them to compare them to like some sort of like lay person who has no experience, which is like a doula. There's almost like people call them a doula. Not that doulas aren't amazing. I love me some doulas, but it's a different, you know, that's almost like in the media kind of how they're portrayed, just like off the street, gonna deliver a baby. It's just not the case.
And it's the information, I think, just, you know, lack of information, lack of understanding, and just running with assumptions and stories. And, you know, I'm guilty of it in other areas, and I'm sure I don't remember all of my perceptions of home birth and midwives before we decided on it, but I imagine they were of the judgmental, unhealthy variety. And so it's just, you pick those things up and you assume that anything that has to do with birth or medical, all of that needs to take place in a hospital with a doctor. You just assume that's what we're taught that you need to do.
And yeah, so, they're infallible. They're doctors. Yeah, I absolutely. Mean, what could, you know, and they are amazing. Don't get me wrong. But
yeah,
no, I
have, my father's a doctor and my mom is an RN. So,
like, so you have a really unique perspective from growing up with that.
Many, many doctors in my family. And so I'm, you know, I've been around those conversations and around those people in hospitals for my whole life.
And thank God for them. I mean, truly, absolutely. I appreciate their sacrifices, but it doesn't necessarily mean they need to be with every single birth. So they are amazing. I mean, gosh, their knowledge is astounding, honestly, just like with midwives.
Right. So given your history and your experience, you know, passionate about birth, you know, from the get-go, and now your experience in your profession, what was it like then for you as Zoe's birth was imminent, like as you're in the birthing process, like what's it like now being on the other side of it?
Well, it's amazing. I don't know if I'm the only one who does this. I don't think I am, but you get this like ability to just like really, like when I leave the hospital, like I turn my brain off, my nurse brain. Well, more or less. I mean, not completely, but like I'm very much able to like the patient side. It is a whole different thing. Like even though I can like, when she gives me a shot of Pitocin, like at the end, I was bleeding a teeny bit. And so she just gave me like an intramuscular shot of Pitocin, no big deal. It was over. But like, I know what that means. I'm like, oh, should I be concerned about my bleeding? But and that's like on the one side of the brain. But then on the other side of the brain, you're a first-time mom who is like, oh, I've got a baby and I'm just totally enthralled in this moment. Or like labor was not any easier, for example.
Right. You don't get like an in.
Yeah. No, I wish it had. I mean, I wasn't, again, I went into labor at 41 weeks and 6 days and delivered after midnight. So technically at 42 weeks, but that morning I was going to have to go be induced if she didn't come. And so I was very ready for her to be born.
Oh, yeah.
My fears of birth were pretty much gone. And I was like, dear God, like, get this baby out of me. I cannot stand to be pregnant another day. And so, but still, you know, labor was, you know, I told my husband, we prepared a little bit for the birth as far as, well, obviously I had my medical knowledge, but I'm not an L&D nurse. So there's still a lot of holes in my knowledge as far as, you know, I've got just a very basic knowledge of that. Maybe a little above basic, but certainly not midwife status. And so I, you know, we read, that, you know, Ina May's, I forgot which particular book, but I consider it her primary book, although that's kind of ignorant. I don't know what it's called. Maybe it's like the Guide to Childbirth or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I think that's
like
what it
that.
Is. I think you're correct.
I consider that her primary book for no particular reason. And, you know, other, you know, I looked at the hypnobirthing and we kind of just vaguely researched. But I consider labor to be a bit of a rabbit hole. You do the best you can to prepare. But then when it starts, you're just going to jump down that rabbit hole and follow it where it goes. And that's the best you can do. Cope the best that you can. So my medical knowledge did not in any way help it not hurt or or prepare me. And I was still just as nervous as far as, you know, oh, you know, she didn't cry a ton, but my midwife wasn't worried. Her oxygen was great and she was perfectly well colored. So it was all fine. But you're like, oh, why isn't she crying? Is she okay? And the midwife, of course, is like, no, everything is just fine. No worries. So
right.
Honestly, it didn't really do much as far as perhaps it made me a little bit more watchful, but I was still just your average kind of first time mom praying that everything goes smooth, and it really mostly did. So I was very fortunate, but I wish I could say that, oh no, it made labor so easy. I was great. No, unfortunately not.
Well, who all was there? Who was the birth team?
We kept it very private, just because I didn't know, you know, can I do this without an epidural? Is that it? Can I? I did. I'm so grateful, but it was just me, Chris, and our two midwives, and that was it. In hindsight, I kind of wish I would have opened it up a little bit more as far as family and maybe a photographer. And I do hope to do that again, you know, in the future. But, you know, have all those people invite them in. But that's just kind of what I do when I get scared or just, you know, get nervous about things. I tend to kind of like close in a little bit and want to be left alone. And so that's a bit of a fault of mine. But it turned out to be a really beautiful experience and it went very nearly perfectly according to plan. I mean, no birth was perfectly according to plan. Otherwise, it'd be painless with no drugs. It'd be magical. But otherwise, yeah, it was a very private time. And it was really just beautiful to just kind of start our family, just us. It was kind of sweet. Although, again, next time I might open it up a little bit more.
Right. And did you use that water like you had intended to?
Oh, you'll laugh. So I hated the bath. It was awful. Isn't that hilarious? I couldn't stand it. I was like, this is awful. I like my water like piping hot, but if you do that, your blood vessels, of course, open and then your blood pressure can drop. So there's kind of a limit on how hot the water can be. And I like scalding hot. Like it's not healthy, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You do? It's just,
I like
I
my baths
like,
really hot also.
It's comforting. And then Chris is like, are you like okay? You're gonna burn yourself. I'm like, no, this feels comfortable. So of course I couldn't do that. And then at our old house, so we've since moved, it had a beautifully large tub, but the soap dish is like inserted into the wall. And so I'm like trying to like get like what's that word? Like that position to like push, and I kind of put my legs like on either side of the tub in the soap dish. I kept having to move my head. So I was like, get me out of here. And so I like labored mostly on the toilet for like literally like 5 hours. So glamorous, so glam. just because I had a really premature desire. That was actually the hardest part for me. The contractions were of course difficult. Not like, oh yeah, I'm so great. Contractions don't hurt. But I had this urge to push. I thought that I had to fight after like the first hour of labor, and my labor lasted like 6.5-7 hours. And so this constant, like your body just wants to push and you can't because you're like 4 centimeters dilated. Not a good plan. You know, you'll cause swelling in your cervix. So that actually to me was the hardest part. And by sitting on the toilet, I was able to kind of more cope with that feeling. And so I could feel the kind of up and down of contractions, but that actually was really side to like having to like breathe. And literally every contraction, I would sit on the toilet for hours and just be like, this urge to push is not going to win. This urge to push is not going to win. I'm not going to put like just each single one. And then after all that, I tried to push in the water because that was what I wanted to do. And I ended up being on that stool thing. I don't know what they call it. That little where there's like a little hole in the stool. And
birthing stool is what they called it for me. That's where I birthed Maya. Yeah.
Yes. And that's what I did. And I Chris sat behind me on the little birthing ball and like supported me. And that was actually so it's so funny that this little crux, this whole water birth thing is like what changed my entire trajectory. And then I didn't even want to do it.
That is pretty funny.
It was kind of, I guess, meant to be anyway.
So when you were fully dilated and you were kind of given the okay to push, was that something that you were were you able to get into that pushing sensation? What did, you know, how did that happen for you?
Well, it's funny you ask because, you know, after hours of just fighting this urge, you would have thought like, I'd be like, all right, let's go. But I actually couldn't, I almost felt kind of numb to that feeling that I like didn't know how to do it anymore. And so literally like the entire pushing, which was I think 45 minutes to an hour, kind of, you know, standard first time mom time, I think. Like my midwife actually had to kind of press on my like vaginal area or cervical area. I'm not really sure. I don't know what area, but she had to push on it to help me know where to push. And I couldn't even feel the contractions by the end. I just kind of generally hurt. And so she's like, push with the contractions. And I'm like, I don't know when I'm having a contraction. So I just pushed, which is stupid. That's not a good plan, by the way. Listen to your body is a better plan. But I was just like, I'm going to push this baby out. So I guess by sheer force of will, I just pushed indiscriminately. And she came out eventually, which I was, now I'm kind of like, I'm hoping this, I am pregnant with my second. I'm 14 weeks, and so we're doing Christmas.
That's awesome.
Sorry, I forgot I, like, didn't mention that. I guess I expected you to be psychic.
Congrats.
Sorry. So Christmas Day is our due date for, we don't know boy or girl or anything yet. Awesome. Still early days. But I'm really hoping and praying that early premature urge to push doesn't happen, and so I can kind of feel what labor is supposed to feel like and pushing is supposed to feel like.
That's cool. We have big smiles on our faces over here.
Oh, that's so
thank
exciting.
You.
Well, and thank with you. The time frame since Zoe's birth, I mean, this will just be my wish for you putting out there. She kind of carved the pathway very nicely, so baby number two might just, like, you know, slide right out.
Oh, God, I hope so. From your mouth to God's ears. I hope so. And my mother had what they call a precipitous birth with my brother, who's younger than me. So I was first, so my brother was second. And she had him in like under 3 hours. And I'm like, if that could just happen for me, like just long enough for the midwife to get there, I'm down for that. That's cool with me.
Yeah, we'll sign up
and, like,
for that.
And like two pushes.
As well.
Yeah. Where do I sign? Yeah, exactly.
Gosh, Alyssa, thank you so much. I mean, this was an awesome interview for so many reasons, and then you just top it all off with that amazing cherry.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, thank
that's
you.
So great. And you
I had so much fun.
Your experience and your just the way you deliver it too, like very real. Like, you kick it straight, but then it's also just like it comes from a very well thought out and very like heart-centered place, and I just think it's so cool.
Oh, thank you. Well, and I think all the same things for your podcast. Heart-centered, real. I love it. I so appreciate what y'all do. And thank you so much for having me.
Yes. And you have to keep us posted on
this
baby number two progress.
Yeah, we'll have to have another conversation.
Oh, I would love that. Oh, and I'm just hoping there will just be nothing to tell. I had two contractions. The baby came out. It was great.
The end. The shortest episode in the history of the show.
Yes. I would love to be that for you. But, you know, probably not.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you so much. I so enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you for everything and all that y'all do. I so very much appreciate it. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved, Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.